And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The ASL Sports Zone.
Havana Brown. Havana Brown. Red one. Miss Waterland. From Miami.
Jacob Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Happy Win Ticket Wednesday. We're going to give away some Pitbull tickets later on in the show. Do you think Pitbull is Armpit McAfee's favorite artist?
They have similar energy. Or you think just because of the pit aspect?
I think it's the pit thing.
You think pits stick together?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Maybe.
No?
Well, they're referring to two very different kinds of pits.
Where does Pitbull come from? What is that?
I believe it's after his dog or something.
No, I mean, like, where does the name Pitbull come from? Not the rapper. Why do they call it a Pitbull?
Yeah, maybe.
Does it live in a pit? What's the deal?
It's probably named after its leg pits, or because dogs don't have arms. It doesn't really look like your traditional bull.
The history of fighting in pits against bulls gave them their name. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Lame.
They fought bulls in pits, so we called them pit bulls.
Oh. Okay. We lacked creativity back then.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, straightforward. I mean, it's a good name. Pit bull is a good name, both for a rapper and a dog.
Is he a rapper? Is that his genre?
Yeah. I think he's a... Yeah, absolutely. He's got a little bit of a Latin flair, right?
Okay. I don't know. I'm not that...
Paving the way for...
I feel like his featured songs are a lot better than his own personal songs.
His deep cuts are rough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he has some good hits, but I think overall the songs he features in are a lot better than just his regular songs.
I would imagine, though, his concerts are probably a good time because he's a positive vibe guy, right?
Oh, I want to go.
Yeah, he's a party.
That's the idea?
Guy. Yeah.
One of my friends already texted me and tickets aren't that expensive. Like for the...
Oh, so jump on it.
Yeah. So I'm like, I mean, if it's like $50, why not?
Yeah. Go see Pitbull.
Well, it's at the amphitheater too, right? America First Credit Union Amphitheater. There's like not a bad seat in that venue, in my opinion. I've watched plenty of great concerts from the grass. And yeah, you're not right up close, but the sound is great. You can see everything. It's not obstructed.
Also, sometimes the lawn is more fun.
Way more fun. The fun crowd is on the lawn, and I would argue the access to the restroom/refreshments is far better. But then you have the, like, oh, I got to find my way back to where I was in the dark kind of thing going, which can be a little rough. But
stepping over people.
Jake's priorities, though.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I've spilled on more than one other person's lawn blanket. You have to. Don't give me that. But yeah, the lawn is a more loose vibe.
Casual.
At most shows, I would say.
Matches your vibe.
Exactly. And you can get away with anything on the grass.
There's not a lot of things I'm trying to get away with at a concert.
Well, you're going to the wrong concert.
Apparently, I need to go to Pitbull and try to get away with things.
Anything goes on the grass.
I'm just trying to get away with stuff. What? We'll see. We'll see what I get away with.
All right, Ben. Where do you want to start today? Your Knicks?
Sure. We've had some great playoff series. I was pulling my hair out last night at one of the games at the Orlando-Cleveland game.
We were totally wrong about that game.
Hey, well, and I didn't realize Jared Allen wasn't going to play, and they had a chance to win it. I mean, the Magic gave that game away. The Magic were better. Paolo Banchero was the best player on the floor, 39-8-4. He's a star in the making.
But they made shots and somehow lost. Which is not...
How they lost is, and I tweeted about it, I'm sorry to just rehash it, this idea that you don't need to have a point guard or just somebody who actually gets you into your offense. They just have Paolo Banchero or Franz Wagner dribble up, stand 5 feet behind the three-point line, and just look at each other like, are you going to throw me the post-entry pass or am I going to throw you the post-entry pass? And then you get it and just pivot a bunch of times and try to take a fadeaway jump shot.
Yeah, their offense is not good.
Just run something. Get a point guard and run something. You drafted Anthony Black in the first round. His whole thing is, I run stuff. I'm a connector. I see everything. Fine. Maybe he hasn't done it a whole lot this year. He's done it a whole lot in his life. But you can't just force a guy into this role. It's really hard to do. I get Jokic can do it. I get some of the guys can do it. You guys can't do it. And you're giving away playoff games by forcing it down your own throats to this idea that you're going to be able to just turn Paolo Banchero into a guard.
Yeah, that's not a
It's not
be
a thing.
But
and you lost as a result, and you probably are going to lose the series as a result of that.
Well, to your point, Ben, do you not have? Hopefully, you don't have the box score in front of you.
I have it. I won't look at it.
Okay, don't look at it. Give me the combined assists from the Magic starting backcourt, meaning Jalen Suggs,
okay,
who we love because of his defense,
but they don't let him touch the ball.
And Gary Harris, their starting backcourt.
Five total assists
between them.
3 and 2.
You're going with 5.
Yeah.
Sarah, do you want to take a guess?
Total assists. I said 5.
Ben said 5 between two players, Gary Harris and Jalen Suggs.
In the backcourt.
Oh, gosh. I'll go 1 below. I'll go 4.
Okay. Ben, now I'm going to follow up this question and ask you, how many assists did I have last night?
0.
I had the same amount as those two.
Your starting backcourt had 0 assists.
0. The bagel. Ugh. The old bagle.
I hate something so bad. I hate it so bad.
But that totally backs up what you're talking about.
I'm just...
0.
I was literally, outwardly angry watching the game last night, which, The Knicks 76ers game was unbelievable. That's been one of the best series I've ever watched in my life. Just every game is crazy. Something insane happens in the last 30 seconds of every
Maxie
game.
Maxie was awesome.
Maxie scored 9 points in the final minute and get 7 in the final 30 seconds to send a 6-point game to overtime and then took over and won further. It was great. But just watching teams give away games like that. Like Orlando, I know you're not here very often. You should recognize even more importantly that you can't just throw stuff away. I mean, they're just having Paolo Banchero drive to the hoop and try and throw things to the corner. He doesn't know where guys are.
Which, well, again,
he's 21. He's 21. You're trying to develop some of that stuff, but it's so disrespectful to the game. I hate it. I'm not trying to be this purist because I'm really not this basketball purist, but I do want you to understand that it is important to run an offense at times. And that right now, your 21-year-old and Franz Wagner, who's never been in this situation, are not good enough to do it. As good as they are, they're not good enough to do that. And Jamal Mosley's just sitting there, and he's a really good coach, but he's just sitting there with his hands in his pocket saying, like, I don't know what else to do.
Gary Harris may have had the worst line I've ever seen.
Okay, what do you have?
So 19 minutes.
Okay.
As the in the starting backcourt, 19 minutes, 0 points.
Yeah.
He was 0 for 3 from the field, 0 for 2 from 3.
You've established no assists.
No assists, no rebounds. Now, hold on. I'll get to the positive in a second. He did have 2 turnovers and 3 personal fouls.
Okay.
But did have 2 block shots somehow.
Okay, good for Gary.
Which is exactly what you want out of your starting guard.
My...
Make sure to go out there and get a couple of blocks, Gary.
19 minutes?
19 minutes.
Of cardio.
Which is not like 8 minutes.
Oh, no, there like, are
I,
a,
I'll forgive that line for 8 minutes.
Foul trouble at the end of the first quarter or at the end of the half, and you're just like, well, we just don't want our starting guard to get their third foul at the end of the second quarter. So we're up 8. We can survive with 8 minutes of Gary Harris or 4 minutes of Gary Harris here and then maybe 4 minutes again at the end of the third quarter. So our starting guard can play, Markelle Fultz can play the whole 12 minutes. They didn't do that. It's...
And how bad is Markelle Fultz if they're
right.
like, oh,
if he can't
man.
Play.
And his line wasn't that bad in 15 minutes, but he's so bad they can't play him. Yeah, to your point, I mean, it's like, how bad are you? And by the way, Donovan Mitchell, what did you think of his game?
It was awful.
Yeah, he was bad.
He has been awful in this series, and I know he's been hurt. He had a couple of good games to start, and he had 30, and you're like, okay, looks like Donovan Mitchell's fine, and he's healthy. Donovan just is exactly who we thought he was. He's not better.
He still is, yep.
He's not better in Cleveland. His numbers were better last year because they ran a different system that kind of, I don't want to say juiced his numbers. He's as good as what his numbers are.
He was more selfish last year in Cleveland.
They just kind of let him do other things.
Yeah.
And good for him. He was all NBA second team, and he laughed at the idea that Shea got it over him on Twitter. And then obviously look at how good Shea is and how good Donovan is, and Shea was absolutely right. And all the voters were right that Shea was better.
Donovan's the same guy.
I mean, Donovan... This is going to make you mad. I'm not trying to be mad.
Uh-oh.
Make you mad. Like, Jalen Brunson's better than Donovan Mitchell.
No, stop it.
Jalen Brunson is better than Donovan Mitchell, and it's not close.
So.
He's a lot better than Donovan Mitchell.
You just love Jalen Brunson.
He's better than Donovan by a lot.
He's not even better than Tyrese Maxey.
Well, Tyrese Maxey is also a star. Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Maxey right now in this series are unbelievable going at each other. But yeah, you're just so capped, unfortunately, with Donovan Mitchell. I was talking to a guy who knows Jazz basketball pretty well. We were texting, and he said the Pelicans and the Cavs should swap Donovan Mitchell and Brandon Ingram. Now, Donovan Mitchell, I think, is better than Brandon Ingram. But I think maybe they should swap Darius Garland and Brandon Ingram and hope that, I guess, Donovan Mitchell wants to be around and would re-sign for more or re-sign in Cleveland if Brandon Ingram was there. But, man, the problem is you are so capped with Donovan Mitchell as your best player. The same way the Jazz were capped with Donovan Mitchell as their best player. And Danny Ainge came in, and he read that situation within a week of being here and said, yeah, we're going to have to blow this up. Being close is not being there. You know, saying you're halfway there does not mean you're going to get to your final destination. And Donovan, as good as he is, I'm not trying to trash him because he's really good. He just, if he's your best player, you're really going to cap yourself, which is why he needs to end up in, you know, San Antonio or one of these spots that has a superstar big man that he can just be the second option. And he needs to realize that's who he's got to be.
You could say the exact same thing word for word about Jalen Brunson.
Oh, of course you could. Yeah, absolutely. Jalen Brunson is not good enough by himself to win a title. No, not even close.
He's not good enough to be the best player on a title team.
No, absolutely not. He's not. He's got there that limitation still exists. I mean,
he needs a Patrick Ewing type player.
Well, he carried
get himself
old Patrick Ewing over the finish line. But no, yeah, absolutely. They need Joel Embiid. Unfortunately, Joel Embiid, after seeing Tyrese Maxey last night go off for 40 plus points, including just dagger three after dagger three late, including a four-point play in the final minute when that was the one thing you couldn't do if you were the Knicks. Embiid's never leaving Philly. As long as Maxey's there, he's never leaving Philly. Tyrese Maxey's perfect as far as, like, personality is unshakable. They tried to start James Harden over him. He didn't care. He didn't say, like, fine, trade me. James Harden's an idiot. I'm better than James Harden. And you're taking away my minutes and my development right now to the point where you're not even going to offer me a super or a max contract right off the bat. They made him wait for it. He's still going to sign it this offseason. Yeah, Tyrese Maxey is everything you want in a star.
Well, if he does sign it in the offseason.
Yeah, I think he will. I would.
He could Gordon Hayward this thing easy.
Imagine him taking the qualifying offer and be like, no, but I'm good. Truly unrestricted free agency.
I'm good. That could happen.
That would be a shocker.
That could happen.
He'll get his $200 million this summer. And
yeah, he seems to be a good yin to Embiid's yang, but the rest of that team is so terrible.
So bad. Tobias Harris is awful.
Well, yeah, the whole rest of the team is awful.
Like, their third best player is Nicholas Batum.
It's never a good sign when you're propping up a real geezer to play a major role. Like, it's not a good sign when the Lakers do it. It's not a good sign when teams do it. And Kyle Lowry is a geezer at this point, and they're just trying to prop him up and wheel him out there and being like, we need you to dial back the clock, Kyle.
It's, yeah.
Not a good sign.
No, it's not. They're
Nick Batum, same thing.
He's their third best player right now. Nick Batum, I mean, he had the game-saving block on Jalen Brunson at the final possession because he's so big and he can still move his feet pretty well that he allowed that game to go to overtime after Tyrese Maxey hit that logo three to tie the game up. But, yeah, I mean, they've got so much work to do. The problem is I don't know how much better they're going to get, even with free agents.
And as we talked about the other day, isn't there nobody contracted to be on the team next year?
It's just those two. I mean, it's like Joel.
Got to flip the whole team.
It's Joel, and they will re-sign Tyrese Maxey, which is a good place to start. You've got your number one. You've got your number two. That's the hardest thing to get in the NBA. Joel's got to start staying healthier. But you've got your two guys. They've got to fill out the whole rest of the roster via trade or free agency, and we'll see if they can do it.
That's brutal.
Oh, it was crazy.
That's brutal.
It was by design. Daryl Morey wanted to have all this flexibility to go out and sign people, but
he is a moron.
Again, you're going to end up signing Talen Horton-Tucker for $8 million because you have money and you have spots.
Hot dog's loving it.
Yeah, he's got his eyes set on Philadelphia. Like, I'm going to be the starting
shooting
guard.
He's already looking at real estate. Hot
dog! The city of brotherly love.
Yeah.
Perfect for me.
Going to get a nice condo downtown.
Yeah. So, I mean, the games were fun. It was great. The playoffs have been great. I love the NBA playoffs. I think the first round has lived up to expectation. I thought the Pacers were going to close out the Bucks, and then no-showed without Giannis and without Damian Lillard.
The plucky Bucks.
The Pacers no-showed Malik Beasley hit. I watched Malik Beasley myself score 30 points in that game, and I looked at his final box score. He had like 16. I swear I saw him hit 8 threes in a row at one point. But yeah, if the Pacers can't stomp the Bucks without Giannis and Dame.
Well, the East is terrible. Nobody believes
steamrolled by the next round.
Of course they are.
Which is either the Knicks or the 76ers. And now the Knicks have to go back to Philly with Philly having all this belief in itself. And the Knicks could still win either of the next two games. I wouldn't rule out winning and closing out a series on the road in Philly. But, man, they had that game up 6 with 30 seconds to go and you don't win is shocking.
It's shocking how bad the East got overnight.
Really
like,
quickly.
It was terrible for decades. And then it was good, I think, for a season.
It was last year. I remember specifically having conversations saying, like, I don't care about the West playoffs. They're kind of boring.
Is finally good.
The East, every series is going to be great. And now all of a sudden it's like your third best team is Indiana.
It's awful. Oh, so bad.
Okay.
The Bucks were a disaster all year.
All year.
And they were the, what, 3 seed?
Yeah. I mean, the Knicks lost Julius Randle, who most people would have said is their best player this year, or at least going into the season, lost him for the second half of the season
the
and got better.
Stink. They're the Wizards of 3 years ago with a decent were with a coach that overplays his guys.
They've got more talent than that, obviously. But yeah, I mean they're not like neither of them holds a candle to the Celtics, and even now the Celtics don't have Kristaps Porzingis.
They're still gonna win easily.
It's the season of the calf strain. If they still don't have Kristaps by the time he gets to the finals, they're going to lose the finals to whoever comes out of
the West.
He
should be back by the conference finals, right? Isn't that the...
You would hope so.
Isn't that the rumor? Yeah, you never
but
know.
The calf strain, again, ever since we saw Kevin Durant play through a calf strain and then blow out his Achilles.
Yeah, it's tough.
You don't mess with calf strains.
We saw Mehmet Okur do it
in
a series against the Nuggets.
You just don't... The calf strain is the ultimate... You don't mess with it. It's why we haven't seen Giannis in the playoffs. He's got a calf strain. Jamal Murray, the fear with him right now is he has a calf strain. So
yeah,
we're just
rough.
Seeing a lot of them at this point. I don't know what the deal is there, but yeah, it's this that one injury that you've got to be really careful with.
Well, listen, Orlando coming back full circle. They've got some roster stuff they got to do. I love their experiment. We've talked about it. But yeah, I'm with you. You got to run something. Like, you've got to run something. I love their size. I love their young players. I like Franz Wagner. Like Banchero. Not so wild about Fultz. Like the other Wagner. But yeah, they got to get something.
They might ruin it this summer by going and getting Trae Young.
Oh, it'd be the worst move possible.
I
so
can really
I'm
see
sure
them
that's,
doing that.
That's what they're doing. Yeah, but they're going to have to outbid LeBron to do it.
Yeah, they would. They would have to outbid 3 picks and Austin Reeves, which is probably what they're going to give up, which, you know, I honestly don't know what. I mean, I'm sure the Magic own all their own future first round picks because they haven't made any major trades. They've just tanked and gotten these players. So I can't imagine that would be an issue, but they could really. Not recognize what their culture is. Say, like, well, we need a point guard, and the best distributor out there is the guy who averages 11 assists a game, and Trae Young not realizing, well, he's going to dribble for 18 seconds, and then he's going to dump the ball off to Paolo, and Paolo's going to take more bad mid-range jump shots. Paolo needs to get away from being Carmelo and needs to lean into being, you know, late-game Kawhi or late-game LeBron, who aren't afraid to go to the basket. Paolo just loves fading away from the hoop. He's great.
Yeah.
He had 39 last night.
But
his talent is crazy. He's got to stop doing that stuff.
But the thing about that is, like, listen, I hated Carmelo's game. Let's stop making Carmelo comparisons. But, like, look at somebody who was really good at hitting faders to win was Dirk Nowitzki. And you know why he was really good at that? Because that played to all of his advantages.
Uh-huh.
He was taller than the guy guarding him, more than likely. He had a quick release, which helped him get the shot off.
Yep.
All he needed was, you know— 6 inches of daylight, and that shot was going down. It played to all his advantages, and he was really, really good at it. Banchero's advantage is you go stand in front of that guy,
right.
And if you do stand in front of that guy, you're going to foul him, or he's going to dunk and win the game.
Yeah.
So why would you take a fader?
Yeah. He's also not.
That negates all your advantages.
Dirk is in the conversation for the greatest shooter
over
6'8 of all time. I mean, it's like he and Kat and Larry Bird. And Paolo's just not there. He's a 33% three-point shooter.
Jordan hit a lot of fadeaway winners. He's a guard.
Yeah.
He's 6'6". He could run over some guys, but he's not running over Barkley.
Right. So,
I agree with you. Sorry. It is a good series.
And they're going to win game six in Orlando. Like, Cleveland hasn't traveled at all, and I don't expect them to travel well to Orlando in this next game, so it's going to go 7. I'm not betting on a young Magic team winning on the road in Cleveland.
I hope the Lakers trade for Trae Young so much. I hope that happens.
Very realistic.
So badly.
Very realistic that happens.
You know, I was thinking about this. LeBron is like an old, not old, old school, but kind of an old school Italian gangster. I'm thinking Goodfellas here, where you latch on to a franchise, you bleed it dry for all your own self-interest, and then you leave it in a fiery ruin.
You move on.
Yep. And like, if you think about it, he even tried to do that in Miami, but Pat Riley told him no, and that's why he left, right? And so he left Cleveland in ruin the first time, tried to do it the second time, but the shop owner called cops, the bar owner.
Yeah.
Said, you're not going to exploit me, pal.
Right.
So then he moved on to Cleveland, did that in Cleveland. Now he's doing it in L.A. Let me ask you this, though. The Lakers, the most valuable franchise in the NBA. Isn't it kind of sad that they let that happen? Like, it's one thing for the Cavs to let that happen, right? It's one thing for the Rockets to let James Harden do that. Another clutch guy, by the way. But the Lakers are going to re-sign 40-year-old LeBron and draft his kid because he wants them to, and then spend all the rest of their resources acquiring a player that doesn't make them any better at all because he wants that. Isn't that sad?
I mean,
if you're the Lakers, isn't that sad?
LeBron is the most, I mean, not just famous player, but most powerful player maybe in NBA history. More than Jordan was. Certainly more than Kobe was, more than Shaq was. He conducts so much around the league to the point where he's made Brian Windhorst famous. He's made Clutch famous. Like, everyone knows who his agent is, and his agent controls all these other players around the league.
And his agent's just some guy who sold hats to him as a kid.
And no one wants to make Rich Paul mad because you might accidentally make LeBron mad, even though he's never going to come play for your team. Like, there's this whole thing there that he has that much power. But you're right. I mean, there are two franchises in the NBA, right? It's the Lakers and the Celtics. Danny Ainge never let players get bigger than the Celtics. LeBron is just bigger than the Lakers. And look, he probably would have been bigger than the Celtics too. I'm not saying he wouldn't have. But you got the power imbalance there is so out of whack that, yes, he's just flushing all these assets down the drain in L.A., and it's going to leave them bare, and it's why this, you know, future pick the Jazz have in 2027 or 2028 from Lakers, whatever it is, the top four protected pick, is going to be super valuable because you know LeBron's not playing until then, and they have nothing, they have no way to improve themselves after that. I mean, it's going to be...
No, he's going to leave the franchise in a fiery mess. That's what he does.
And
he
so takes the Jazz over are saying, fine.
But like,
we'll be there in the ashes to pick it up.
I would argue, and maybe I'm wrong, but I would argue that LeBron does not have any more power than Michael Jordan did. But that they flex that power in completely different ways.
Yeah, fine. Sure, you're probably right.
Michael
yeah.
Jordan flexed the power to enrich himself and honestly change the way for all time that athletes are marketed. That's how powerful he was.
Yes.
And he made the largest, he created basically the largest athletic apparel, shoe wear company on the entire planet.
Yep.
And then even carved off his own shoe company under the umbrella of that other shoe company that is a behemoth. All that to make him a billionaire and an icon and still the most marketable athlete on the planet, which is just crazy.
Yep.
Crazy. LeBron has done it, flexed it to...
He's just done it more on the court. Michael did everything off the court. LeBron did it all on the court.
He messes with the franchise and he has created an agency, which I don't think... is actually against the rules, but since his name's not on the agency, that's how they get around it. I don't think that's right.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't take Brian Windhorst seriously ever because of his... I mean, he's LeBron's childhood friend who he's dragged to the Cleveland plane dealer. And then he went to Miami. As he left the Cleveland Plain Dealer and went to Miami for ESPN and covered LeBron all there. And then he went back to Cleveland, his base with ESPN. He's in L.A. now. I mean, that's – I don't take his reporting seriously. I don't know. I don't like – I wish LeBron would have flexed his power in the lockout 10 years ago. Why don't you go get a couple points back on the CBA for your fellow players? He was, Ben, I don't know if you remember it. I don't know if you were covering the NBA when that was going on. Maybe it was at the beginning of your run. But LeBron said nothing ever during that whole thing. He let Derek Fisher go in there and get pantsed by the owners.
Yeah.
Because he knew he would the new CBA wasn't going to take a bite out of him.
Right.
That's not, you know, he didn't go to the mat for his fellow players. He didn't actually flex his muscle to improve the game. All he's done is flexed his muscle to get what he wants.
Yeah, and as a result, the player empowerment thing has been in the wake of what LeBron has done to benefit himself. Right?
Like, and now other players are doing it.
Right. Yeah. He normalized, well, I'm leaving somewhere in my prime to go join a championship contender.
He normalized that it's about me. Like, you can look at, even though LeBron's been super durable, the load management thing. He's normalized I'm going to look out for this guy.
Right.
And I'm not really worried about I'm certainly not worried about the regular season, but I'm not worried about the team.
But he is the greatest tone setter in NBA history, and great not meaning good, meaning he's had a more overwhelming impact on setting the tone of the NBA over his 20-year career than any other player.
And yet Windhorst is out there just calling him the greatest thing since sliced bread. Ben, how many times have the Lakers finished above 7th in the West in his run there in LA?
Once. Yeah.
And that barely counts because it was 2020.
Yeah, it was in the bubble.
Once, then 7th and below.
Yep.
That's bad. Why would you let that guy run your franchise, let alone if you're the Lakers? Oh, the Lakers. You're the Lakers. Yep. Are you kidding me?
No, it is strange. I mean, and look, he's either the first or the second greatest player of all time. Like, you do what you can to get that guy on your roster. But again, that goes back to the player empowerment and the imbalance that we
have
struck in the NBA.
Not at this point. Not 40-year-old
LeBron.
Yeah,
not now. Yeah. I'm with you, too. Hey, look, they need to trade LeBron. They do. They should trade LeBron now. They should. I mean, they can't because
he's got an option.
Yeah, he's a free agent, essentially. So they can't do it. But, yeah, they need to part ways.
He'll opt out, and I guarantee they sign him to a 2-year extension.
Yeah, of course.
And on top, the cherry on top, they likely take Bronny.
They'll do a one-on-one. They'll give him a 1-year deal with a 1-year player option so we can opt out again next season or just retire. And then, yeah, you draft Bronny in the second round. You find a way to acquire a second-round pick. They might already have a late second-round pick, and you draft him there. You're right. That is the offseason plan, and they're going to trade their first.
Why would you do that?
They're going to trade their first to get to get Trae Young or DeJounte Murray or whoever,
and finish 7th or worse next year.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that? Like, you're saying, like it's inevitable. I know it's inevitable.
Yeah.
If you were an NBA franchise, why would you sign up for that?
Because LeBron has he has that gravity.
Because you're kissing his rear.
Yep.
And you would do this?
No.
Okay, all right, good.
No,
I'm
but
glad that.
I know that is what's going to happen.
And we're just excusing it? Like, oh, it's okay, it's LeBron?
Crazy. I can't fight the sun coming up either. It's going to happen every day, whether I want it to or not.
Top three stories coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Girl, my body don't lie.
Red one.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson, time for the top three stories of the day. KSLSports.com, brought to you by J. Brooks Jewelers. Two locations to serve you, one on Winchester Street across from Fashion Place Mall, the other Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number one, the 76ers force game 6.
In a thrilling game, they stave off elimination in New York, Ben. And we'll see if they can win 2 more.
I'll still take the Knicks just because, you know, you get that many.
Love the Knicks so much with all your heart.
You get that many at-bats, 3 chances to win a closeout series. I mean, 3-1, I know it's happened in our lifetime. We've seen the Jazz blow it. We've seen the Clippers blow it. We've seen Doc Rivers do it several times. You shouldn't lose 3 games in a row in a playoff series when you've been good enough to take a 3-1 lead, barring, you know, some significant injury, and that is not the case here. So I think the Knicks will close it out. They could easily do it in Philly, or they'll have a chance to do it in Game 7. But, hey, again, Tyrese Maxey's a star, and we know how good Joel Embiid is, the reigning MVP. Tonight's games, Heat at Celtics, another chance to close this one out. Heat up or Celtics up 3-1, and then the other great Western Conference series, Mavericks, Clippers. Clippers looking to go up 3-2.
Hopefully Kawhi doesn't play, and the Clippers have a shot.
I do think the Mavericks were a little shocked not having Kawhi out there and kind of maybe went out there with this emotional idea that, oh, we'll beat them because they don't have Kawhi. They're missing their best player. We'll be fine. And James Harden was awesome and Paul George was awesome in the first half, not great in the second half. But
at the moment, they're better without him.
Yeah, much better. And, yeah, again, you can have too many guys. You can have too many people who need the ball to throw off the rhythm, and that is not the issue when Kawhi's not out there now.
Well, I think in the NBA it is often overlooked who has the ball. And listen, if you're going to have the ball 50% of the time that you're on the floor and you're not capable of being effective when the time you have the ball, well, you have to move off the ball. But they didn't, you know, Kawhi wasn't going to move off it. He was going to, when it was super clunky, as we talked about. So if he doesn't play, other guys have a chance to take those opportunities that he was taking, and they're more effective with them. Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely does.
But I'm rooting against Dallas, so I hope the Clippers win.
Probably better for the Jazz if Dallas loses. So if you're a Jazz fan, you're looking for who to root for. Root for the Clippers.
All right, next.
Number two, Devontae Adams shows Jordan some love.
At the time when I was there, I hadn't necessarily seen enough to say this is for sure what I should do. But in hindsight, like we talked about, I mean, the kid is a baller, man. I'm so happy for him. And, you know, I haven't really had a chance to truly sit down and talk with him. But I want to tell him at some point, like, you know, I definitely don't regret changing, but I'm super proud of what you've done. And, you know, if there was a way I could pull you over here and, you know, and drag you with me like that, you know, that would have been cool too. Because, you know, obviously we saw what he did at the end of the year, but I don't regret what I did. But at the same time, it's definitely, you look back on it, you're like, damn, that boy got a ball. Right,
could he be the next one?
Could he be? I mean, I think he is. I think he's shown that. Yeah. And he's starting to come into his own. I mean, you can see the way he's talking in front of the media and everything. It's just like a whole different person than what I saw when I was there. Yeah. And that comes with experience.
Still a lot to work on for Jordan Love's decision-making that undid him a lot early in his year, his first season as a full-time starter. Hurt him again late in the playoffs, but again, we were talking about Jordan Love starting in the playoffs. Very good. I don't want to call it a rookie season because it wasn't, but first year.
I laugh at backhanded compliments like that. I mean, like, it was really, like, those were really nice words by Devontae Adams. But if you were Jordan Love listening to that, if I were Jordan Love listening to that, all I'd hear is, God, that guy really thought I sucked and had no chance at all when he was actually on my team. I mean, who were you telling that when you were here, Devontae? Did you have that opinion when we were cracking jokes in the locker room that, man, you would be now today so utterly shocked that I'm a competent football player.
It is funny that you remember the biggest qualm that Aaron Rodgers had with the Packers was that they never got him the help that he wanted, including drafting Jordan Love. They are addicted to not helping their offensive side of the ball at all, because I'm looking at their draft right now. They did draft Jordan Morgan, offensive lineman, out of Arizona with their top pick. So that will help. But second-round pick, linebacker. Other second-round pick, safety. In the third round, they got a running back. Other third round, linebacker. Fourth round, another safety. Fifth round, got an O-lineman. Sixth round, another safety. They went really heavy on the defensive side of the ball, which I get it. They need help. And if you have a good quarterback, he can do a lot. So you might as well have an elite defense. But not going out there and finding a replacement for Devontae Adams.
But in hindsight, isn't it at least somewhat ironic that when Aaron Rodgers was making that complaint about the Packers, that he was on the same team as Devontae Adams?
Right.
Who was the best receiver probably still in the league?
Right. Yeah.
Give me more offensive guys!
He had a guy.
They had a guy on the team at that time. He was pretty good.
So we'll see. I'm really curious to watch his second season as a full-time starter.
Man, I'm cheering for him so much.
Absolutely.
I hope he succeeds.
But did he just have a good first year and now everyone's going to catch up to him, or is he going to keep getting better? It'd be awesome if he keeps getting better.
I get the fluke season, I understand, but I have a hard time believing, like, you drag the youngest team in the league to the playoffs. How fluky could that be?
And he kept getting better. He got better throughout the year. He was a lot better by the end of the season than he was at the beginning.
Like, remember when everybody thought Devontae Culpepper was really good, but the truth was he was just throwing to Randy Moss, and as soon as he was not playing with Randy Moss, he was, like, terrible and drummed out of the league, basically.
Dante Culpepper, yeah.
What did I say?
Devontae.
Devontae.
Devontae Adams, yeah.
No, Dante Culpepper. Like, that was fluky. Jordan Love, can you name another player on the Packers? Like, he dragged a bunch of nobodies, no offense to them, or at least young players. Again, the youngest team in the league, took him to the playoffs.
Had a couple of good running backs, but...
That doesn't feel fluky to me.
I agree. I'm with you. And again, the fact that he got better and not worse throughout the year, it wasn't the pitcher who pitches a perfect six innings in his MLB debut, and then by the seventh inning, everyone's seen him and they shell him. It was the opposite. The more he saw, the better he got.
Remember when Rusty went to the Super Bowl, I think, Rusty Wilson, that is, in his second year? Or was it third? They had the best defense and run game in the league on those teams. Now everybody's like, oh, let Rusty cook. Like, I don't know if he was really the reason that they succeeded.
He wasn't the key reason.
I don't think
he was good enough to do it.
I don't think that was it.
But Marshawn and the Legion of Boom certainly helped.
But you can't say that about Green Bay.
No,
they had no business making the playoffs last year. None. Good for Jordan Love.
Rooting for him. I'm with you.
All right. Stay tuned. Oh, we've got number three.
Still have three.
Yeah, don't get too ahead of yourself.
I do that all the time.
Utah Athletics announces a new multimedia rights partnership.
So they're going to be with JMI Sports, I'm reading this from the University of Utah website. We've also got an article at kslsports.com. JMI Sports is a leading media rights and venue development company that provides management of collegiate multimedia rights. So basically broadcasting, et cetera. Got a new partner.
And that means they're leaving Learfield. We did confirm that, right? Because Learfield and JMI actually have a couple of mutual projects they work on. I think it's Georgia, one of those that they actually do it together. But Utah's been with Learfield for a long time, and now they're going to JMI. I don't think that this really affects your average fan, other than this seems like a real, almost like Utah when they jumped to Under Armour. Because JMI is not one of the big media rights companies. Like, Learfield is huge. I mean, the Learfield Directors Cup, Learfield is huge. Learfield is the Nike of what we're talking about here. And remember when Utah broke with Reebok, I think, to go to Under Armour?
Well, they went with Under Armour because they were going to be just a big dog.
They were going to be one of their original investors, so to speak, and they were going to get treated differently because Nike has the tier system. Are you aware of that? Mm-hmm. Where if you're a tier one Nike school, you're swimming and stuff.
If you're Michigan, Michigan's Jordan. But yeah, if you're one of those.
If you're a tier two Nike school, you get like a set of cleats for the season.
Yeah.
And if you're a tier three Nike school, you get 10% off at the Nike store.
Some golf balls.
Yeah. It's pretty dramatic.
Yep.
And Utah was stuck in a tier with whoever they were with that they weren't really wild about. They might have gone from Reebok to Nike when Reebok kind of went out of business. But anyway, they made a bold move that went to Under Armour, which I think you could say has paid off, although Under Armour is in such bad shape as a company. I don't know how much longer that partnership is going to last. But this feels to me like you're breaking away from Nike and going with Under Armour. Like, there's a high potential of success. Like, this could really be great. But you know what you're getting with Learfield.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
JMI signature collegiate multimedia rights partnerships include Kentucky, Penn, Pittsburgh, Harvard, DePaul, Columbia, San Diego State, Cal, UCSD, I should say. Georgia, which is big, but that's with Learfield.
I believe, yeah.
Notre Dame is with Legends. So you're right. I mean, Utah jumps in there. Kentucky's a bigger name than Utah. But like Penn is an Ivy League college.
Yeah. No, they're going with an upstart.
Yeah.
And if it works, the potential of success and probably the windfall financially would be nice.
They're the same fish. They just moved into a smaller pond.
Right.
They just want to get more love.
They want to get more love and attention and be a crown jewel, so to speak. But the problem is, like, you know exactly what you get with Learfield. Like, and you're going to get it.
You're going to get it.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll have more Jake and Ben coming up next. It's a Win Ticket Wednesday. We'll have tickets to give away. Stay tuned, Pitbull fans. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jacob Mann, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. It's our 50th segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Peach Doors and Windows. It is a Win Ticket Wednesday. Let's give away tickets right now. Caller number 12, 801-575-ZONE. Hooking you up with a pair of tickets to go see Pitbull at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater coming up on September the 25th. 801-575-ZONE. And you're going to go see Pitbull.
Mitch Harper, our BYU insider, is unveiling a extensive list of the top 100 greatest BYU football players of all time. Today, he released numbers 100 through 76. It's the 100th anniversary of BYU football. That's why he's doing it this year. Coming in at number 7, our friend Hans Olsen.
Wait, number 7?
97. Did I say 7?
Yeah, 97.
97, pardon me. That would be high for Hans, as good as he was. I would have put him at 7. That's where I would have voted him. Hans Olsen, coming in at number 97.
Are you talking about the dad in the Second Chances song?
You mean that guy?
Yeah, are you talking about that guy?
The throw-in. That's what I call him, the throw-in.
Yeah, 97. Hey, congrats to Hans.
Landing Hans Olsen was a significant victory for BYU in the 1996 recruiting class. Olsen, the nephew of Hall of Famer Merlin Olsen, was a first-team defensive lineman in Idaho, picked BYU over Tom Osborne's Nebraska Cornhuskers, Washington, Oregon, and Utah State. Olsen went on to be a standout defensive tackle at BYU. He was an All-Mountain West Conference selection his senior season and started in all 12 games. One of Olsen's career highlights was a scoop and score against San Diego State in 1999.
A sweet scoop and score.
With his arms flailing everywhere to celebrate.
Did he put that in there, arms flailing everywhere to celebrate?
Yes, he did.
Did Mitch put that in there?
Yep, he did.
Oh, that's going to make Hans mad.
Well.
I wouldn't want to be Mitch today.
It was a flail. He was flailing. You can see the full list.
Well, did he put a video?
Number 100 through 76.
Of the scoop and score in there?
You bet he did. Right above the arms flailing everywhere.
Have you ever heard Hans talk about how much he regrets not having a touchdown celebration planned?
It's one of those things you should think about. On the off chance you get there, so you don't embarrass yourself. That might have...
I don't think Hans embarrassed himself.
That might have kept him from getting drafted.
He was flailing his arms.
That might be the reason he didn't get drafted.
Like, come on. He just scooped and scored against San Diego State. He didn't embarrass himself.
You were laughing at it just 30 seconds ago.
Well, it's because I know the guy. It's not embarrassing. It's a thing. He put his hands up. He was excited.
I thought that was planned. I thought that was his pre-planned celebration.
Well, if you listen to what his actual plan, because he thought about it afterwards, right, was, I don't think it would have worked. It was some sort of rodeo thing with his teammates where people are riding around and lassoing other people or something, and it was like, I don't think that works in college.
He's like a
Mitch
stunt
put,
man on
Mitch
fire in a movie.
Wailing in there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mitch wrote.
He's in trouble.
His arms flailing everywhere to celebrate.
Dude, I can get away with that with Hans. I don't know if Mitch can.
Sure, Mitch can get away with whatever. Mitch is beloved within the BYU community. Big old Federick there as well.
But what, now it's Brock's turn.
Yeah, see? Everyone's having fun at Hans' expense. That's what the whole station's about. You especially, writing songs with Carl and Dave about the throw-in Hans.
That was a jam. That was an absolute jam.
They really show this arms flailing a lot. This replay that Mitch posted here. Go find it, kslsports.com. I've never seen all these angles of Hans Olsen's arm flailing like this. This they've got like cell phone video back from the late 90s. I don't know how they got that. Other names? Do you curious who else is on this list? 96, Reno Mahe. 95, Sione Takitaki. Matt Bushman, 94. Some familiar names. Larry Moore, 93.
That feels low for my guy Reno.
Well, there's a lot of really good players. Justin Enna coming in at 91.
I think Reno was better than the Bushman.
Todd Watkins, 89.
Todd was a baller.
It's crazy how much talent they have. Isaac Rex coming in at 86. So fun list. We'll have Mitch Harper on coming up on Friday. We'll talk to him.
Todd was better than Isaac.
None of these guys are better than... he's got Dan Sorensen. I mean, now I know Dan's had a great NFL career, and that's jaded our view of him. But
he was good when he was
coming. He was very good, yeah. Coming in at number 78. Anyways, right. Good list from Mitch. Go
all
check
right.
it out.
97.
Kyle Whittingham, controversial, coming in at 76.
Why would that be controversial? He played at BYU.
It seems low.
Seems low? I have no idea. I never watched Kyle play in college. No clue.
mid-30s. He and Hans, 33, 34. That's where I would have voted him.
All right, stay tuned. More Jake and Ben. Don't forget What You Got Wednesday at 11:30, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Than us.
Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
I say y'all having a good time out there.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you to nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Ben, can I hit on a story real quick? And we can move on to some basketball and to some other things. But I'm always like, let me start this off by saying innovators, disruptors, that sort of thing, obviously exist. And those things, you know, change the world. But I'm still oftentimes skeptical of people who come in and say, this is kind of goes to your Matt Ishbia take maybe a little bit.
Okay.
But people that come in and say, oh, no, you know, all these really smart people have been doing this extremely wrong forever. And I'm going to come in and reinvent. Now, again, some people do see the taxi cab industry and the lack thereof these days. Sure. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
it happens. But how many innovators step forward and go, I got it, and they don't? It's probably like 1,000 to 1, right?
Yeah, at least 95%.
So your guy, Neon Dion,
okay,
steps in at Colorado and says, nah, you guys have been doing this wrong forever. I know, and my sheer celebrity, blah, 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 whatever his persona is going to will this team and to victory. And, you know, I'm going to sell the whole, like, God, I don't even know how to put it. I'm going to sell the whole we all rise up kind of, you know, and I'm just mentioning it because he does, like, faith in God, mm-hmm. like that is part of his persona. But yet on the other hand, he cuts his whole team every year and yeah. is really heartless when it comes to that type of situation. Like, if you're not good enough, well, you're not going to play here and I'll find somebody that does. It kind of conflicts in my opinion, but I don't know. I never thought it was going to work. And it was interesting how it played out last year. But have you seen this? There was a player named Xavier Smith who decided to hit the transfer portal. He ended up at Austin Peay. And you could tell by where he ended up. Maybe he wasn't a
high level D1
guy. All right. But Dion went to Xavier and told him to transfer. He said no. He said, I don't want to transfer.
Yeah. I like Colorado.
Like, honestly, if players have the empowerment to go say, oh, I want to go somewhere else, shouldn't they have the empowerment to say, no, I want to stay?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So then basically, Dion's approach with this guy was just destroy his confidence. Treat him as if he's not actually there and run him out of town.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to this Xavier Smith dude. He tried to stay on the team. He was provided conditions where that was not going to be possible and he left. So I guess that happens. So he did an interview for The Athletic and somebody at The Athletic wrote a story for it. Shador Sanders. Shador?
Shador.
Shador, because I pronounced it wrong at Pac-12 Media Day. Oh. Shador. Took to Twitter. Or X, or the talk snapper, whatever it is. And he says, I don't even remember him, to be honest. Bro had to be very mid at best. You're the coach's son.
Yeah, right.
Like, if there's anybody out there who cannot identify with other players on the team, it's you. Therefore, I don't want to hear your opinion. You know, if the starting linebacker or something like that had said, this is just a sour grapes kind of thing. We love Dion or whatever.
Yeah.
I would totally listen to it. But if you're the coach's son, don't comment on it. Like,
you,
it's
don't
not,
get to comment.
You don't get to comment on it. And you know what? He might be really good. He might be. I mean, people are talking about him as a first rounder, right? He might turn out to be a really gifted player. You're the coach's son. And in fact, at the coach's introductory press conference, he said, everybody's going to have to make the team again. Everybody's going to have to prove it. There are no free rides here. And my son's coming in and he's going to be the starter. That's what he said. He said it like the same sentence.
Yeah.
He's going to be the starter. That we know. That we know. So it just bugs me. Like, we don't, your opinion is not relevant, Shador. Let alone running this guy down. God, they already ran him off the team. You really need, is it really useful to dance on this dude? All he did was gave an interview about his experience at Colorado, and that was his experience.
Well,
we know it's not yours, Shador, and your Bentley.
It makes me, it further underlines the idea that Deion is just there while his kids are there, and as soon as his kids are gone, he's going to be gone. Like, they are working as a pack, and nobody else on the team is in that pack, and it's just the Sanderses working together, and as soon as one is gone, they're all going to be gone, and Deion's little thing here, this vehicle that he has used Colorado for to get his son drafted, worked, and he left him in the dust. And there's going to be a lot of cleanup left in his wake, because you're never going to be able to replace Deion. And what he did to kind of set this identity isn't replicable. So you're going to have to reinvent yourself again, which, fine, Colorado didn't have a whole lot that they were holding on to anyways over the last decade before Deion Sanders. But, yeah, this is just a brief affair that Deion is having with Colorado. And the way he's empowered his kids makes me think that he has no intention of being there beyond them.
And listen, here, I'll defend Deion a little bit. That whole telling a player to transfer and then running him out. Every college coach does that. He's no different. You know, Kyle Whittingham, I'm sure, has done that. Kalani, I'm sure, has done that.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
I mean, everybody has done that. But don't pretend to be something different. Don't come in and say, oh, you bozos have been doing it wrong for years. I'm going to do something different. And then just do the same stuff that every coach does.
Blake Anderson. Now, they've ended up losing a lot of players since then, but one of the weird things that he said in spring football that kind of caught my eye was that he said, yeah, we only had three guys leave that we didn't want to leave. What? You know what I mean? Like, you want kids to leave? I get it. That's where we are right now.
You said the quiet part out loud, yeah.
But, like, we only had three kids leave that we wanted to leave, that we didn't want to leave. It was like, ugh. Oh, so you wanted all these other transfers to get out of town?
So you just cut all those other guys or run them off or whatever.
It's a little brutal for college sports, but I get that we moved on from that.
Guess what? Third string corner who's really struggling to make a new life for himself. Your NIL just dried up, and you're not going to play here. So figure out somewhere else to go. And he goes, but coach, I mean, I'm got a 4.0 in school. I'm really nailing it. Like,
you, I left
like
my family
Logan
to be
is,
here.
Yeah, and Logan has been really terrific for me personally. And I honestly, you know, I don't have a real better spot to go at the moment. I said, well, not my problem.
It's not what we're here for.
That sounds like a you problem. That sounds to me like not what college athletics was supposed to be about.
Correct. We're not pointing at Blake Anderson as being the leading
cause.
No,
everybody
cause of
this. Does it. But everybody don't pretend it. To be something different.
Like Deion.
And really, where you're especially not any different than any other father/coach out there. You're no different than the Little League coach that I encountered, where your kid's going to be the star pitcher. You don't say. Well, your kid just walked 4 runs in last inning. You going to march him back out there? Yeah.
He's my kid.
And then he's due up 4th next inning.
He bats cleanup. This is part of a bigger conversation, specifically with Deion in Colorado and the idea of changing a culture. And I'm just, it kind of goes back to your conversation earlier, or your thoughts on, you know, why are the Lakers bending to LeBron? You're the Lakers. You're one of the few franchises that shouldn't ever have to do this. And I've just got me thinking of trying to do it differently is how you started this topic today. And I look at what the Jazz are doing, and Danny Ainge is trying to do it differently than what Dennis Lindsay did and what Kevin O'Connor did and what the Ladens did. Like, he's trying to do something a lot different. And Ryan Smith's trying to do something a lot different. And I think part of the reason some Jazz fans have been so vocal online about the team is Ryan's tried to do a lot of things differently. Jerseys look different. Some of the game experience has been a little bit different. His willingness to lose more games than previous iterations have been, I think, has been different. His patience has been different. And I'm curious how our teams, cultures set by something other than ownership and decision makers. Like, are teams the way that they are forever, regardless of what owner comes in and thinks, well, I'm going to change everything and I'm going to fix it and I'm going to do it differently and all these other guys have been idiots. And I'm not saying that's what Ryan Smith is doing all, but this idea of Matt Ishbia coming in and being like, well, I'm going to do it differently than Robert Sarver and every other Suns owner did.
Or every other NBA owner, period.
And then he recognizes, oh, that's futile. Like, we are the Suns. We are limited or empowered by what certain things are, which is geographic, other fan or fans in the area, what their culture is, where they're from, what other professional sports do we have in the city or state, and how does that impact it? That really, we are, don't have our own original identity. We are just a reflection of the things around us, and I do think teams pick that up.
Okay, so I think that's true in college and not at the pro level.
Okay.
In college, and granted, we're talking about ownership at the pro level. In college, we're talking about, you know, universities. But in college, like BYU will still have the same built-in advantages and disadvantages regardless of who the athletic director or coach is. Now, maybe a coach can come in and adjust around the edges, but he's not going to move the university to Southern California or change the admission standards or change the recruiting pool all that much. At Utah, Witt has not... He did not reinvent what Ronnie Mack was doing. He just honed it and improved upon it.
100%.
From recruiting pool to selling Salt Lake as a destination, all those things. He didn't change anything.
BYU is almost a bad example because they're so unique.
Right.
But there are a lot of other examples that attest to what we're talking about.
Whoever can be the coach at Southern California, they're still going to have the same advantages over everybody else. It's tough to be like... That's why I always thought running the air raid at USC was the stupidest thing ever. You don't need that. You don't need... a gimmick. You don't need a disruptor. You are the evil empire. You are the team that's bigger, stronger, faster than everybody else.
But speaking of that, but, you know, UCLA is always going to be a reflection of what they're not next to USC.
Well, because UCLA has to take USC's leftovers, so they were always going to be softer.
Yes.
And that's what they turn into, because they've got the same advantages and disadvantages regardless of who the coach is. So I think it's more consistent in college. In the pros, there are some built-in advantages and disadvantages, but so much of the pros has to do with playing the game, like navigating within the rules, the salary cap, the trades, the contracts, what's in the contracts. The best general managers are the ones that play the game the best, which makes it more ripe for disruption, in my opinion. Now, if you are, let me do a real-world local example. If you are Traeger and you want to reinvent the grilling world or jump on that wave and dominate it. Who did they bring in as part of their ownership group? I believe, if I'm wrong about this, chalk it up to fake news, but I believe it's the same guy. The Skull Candy guy. The guy that reinvented the headphone business. Great Salt Lake City companies, both of them. Shout out. Or I guess not Salt Lake City. Great Utah companies.
Yeah.
So you bring that guy in. Say, oh, man, okay, well, you took an established, you know...
Creation, a thing that exists.
And you operated within the rules and really figured out something else. You know, whether it's marketing, the product itself, whatever. They're great warranty. You figured out a way to, you know, really be successful. And so Traeger's done what it's done. And they, I'm sure that guy took that expertise from Skull Candy and was like, oh, I could do this again. Danny Ainge has done what he's trying to do before. So, yeah, maybe he is doing it differently than Scott Layden or Kevin O'Connor or Dennis Lindsay or whatever. But it's not like you hired the Moneyball guy to be in your football front office. It's not like you hired Jonah Hill to be a member of the Cleveland Browns front office. You say, okay, I want you to do something differently than it's been done here with the Utah Jazz in the past. And Danny says, well, yeah, I've got a proven concept. Let me show you this year to this year when I was doing it in Boston, and this is what I did. This is what I was patient for the Kevin Garnett move, and this is how it really paid off. This is where I was lucky. This is where I planned it. This is how I was patient. This is not. This is where I made a mistake. This is where I didn't. And you've got somebody who's done it before.
Okay, but let me counter that, and because I'm just curious. And there are exceptions to this rule. And I'm really talking about zoom out 30 years, zoom out 30,000 feet. Of course, there's going to be spikes. Like, the Denver Nuggets won a title. Like, Denver Nuggets don't win titles. Denver Nuggets are historically the Denver Nuggets. Can you totally change that? Because here's what I'll say. you tell me Danny Ainge won in Boston? Yeah, Boston always wins. Like Brad Stevens is winning in Boston. And the people before Brad Stevens won in Boston. Sure. Well, or before Danny. Yeah, now, they didn't win in the 90s. But
I get
like,
your point.
The 80s, they won. You're telling me the Lakers are winning? I'm shocked.
But see, in pro sports, like Detroit won forever and has been a disaster ever since. Like you have to play the game within the rules. You have to have somebody smart making the right decisions because it's not because your mistakes aren't covered up. Your mistakes are glaring. So, yeah, they've won a lot in Boston. Is that because it's fortuitous to win in Boston or they've had the right people at the right time? And see, you know what? See the gap between Ainge and Arbach.
Yeah,
Boston wasn't
yeah,
any
no,
good.
They weren't. They weren't good in the 90s. No, there was a lot of mess.
I mean, look at Alabama between Gene Stallings and Nick Saban. Yeah, there's a ton of built-in advantages at Alabama. And again, that's more evident in college than it is in the pros. But you still have to have somebody smart.
I just think...
They hired Don Shula's kid. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was a disaster.
I feel like, for the most part, not every team, certainly not every team, but maybe 25 of the 30 NBA teams, and you could probably do this with baseball too. You could probably do it with the NFL, in all honesty. Zoom out. Go back 20 years. Or we'll do it now. Write a 3-sentence description of a franchise, like the Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
Go back 20 years, and it would probably apply exactly the same to who that team was 20 years ago. Like, I just don't know how much things change
To your Nuggets point, they change a lot, more than you'd think.
And the Nuggets now are at this spike, so of course it wouldn't apply
and
to
how
the Nuggets.
And how did the Nuggets get there?
But, like, the Pretty Phoenix much... Suns are exactly who they were in the early 90s. Like, good... Close, they can get stars, they might even make a run to the finals, but the breakthrough is not going to be there.
Because they hired the wrong people.
And maybe that's
Denver
all it is.
Forever hired the wrong people. I know people love Kiki Vandeweghe around here for some reason, but that guy was a moron. And frankly, Denver got lucky and absolutely blind luck getting Nikola Jokic.
Of course.
Blind luck.
Right.
But, they made a series of right decisions after that led to their championship. They traded Jusuf Nurkic when that wasn't a given. They looked at Jokic, their second round pick, and Nurkic, their established guy who they picked in the first round, yeah. I think the year before, mm-hmm. and they moved off him super early because then that turned out to be a super smart, very smart move. They re-signed Jamal Murray, even though his injury situation wasn't great, and you couldn't look at him and say he's a max guy. They said, I don't care, we're going to max him out. Then they took advantage of Sacramento firing Michael Malone, mm-hmm. and they said, he's a good coach. We're going to move off of, who was it? Was it Brian Shaw? Or
yeah. Something, yeah.
Terrible, terrible. And they hired a really good coach. And then, and we should talk to Locke about this tomorrow because Locke will tell you what a great trade it was, and I totally agree with him. That Aaron Gordon move turned out to be masterful.
It's the most consequential move of the last 5 years in the NBA.
It's the Pistons acquiring Rasheed Wallace. It's... Yeah. It was
the perfect move.
The perfect move.
Yeah.
So if you look at their recipe for success, yeah, blind luck. You lucked out entirely to get the best player in the league. You got him in the second round. You didn't think it wasn't a risky pick because it was so late. But obviously, you didn't believe in him that much.
No, nobody
like, oh,
did.
We're gonna
yeah.
take a pudgy guy from overseas.
Right.
Like they had no idea. But after they figured it out, they had to make a series of right moves to get them over the top. Like, once Philly figured it out that Joel Embiid was a guy, what have they done? Every wrong move
Everything
you could
wrong.
Possibly make.
Everything wrong.
And how many championships do they have? Zero. Is that Joel's fault, or is that the franchise's fault?
Franchise.
So, yeah, I'm sure Danny would tell you, like, we're going to wait in the weeds for the right opportunity, and we're going to have to get lucky, you know? We're going to have to land a Jokic in the second round, or we're going to have to wait on... Joel Embiid ask out of the Sixers or have the right move for Booker or whatever. We're going to have to get lucky. We're going to have to get lucky that Sam Presti is nickel and diming James Harden. I mean, like, how lucky was Houston? I mean, I guess it didn't work out, but...
I mean, they got an MVP out of it. It absolutely worked out. They didn't win a title, but they got an MVP
right.
and a direction.
How lucky were they? How lucky were they that the Jazz weren't willing to give up on Gordon Hayward? Because that was the rumor that James Harden would have been a Jazz player if the Jazz were willing
to... Jazz had Paul Millsap and picks on the table and wouldn't throw in Gordon.
And wouldn't throw in Gordon Hayward, so they didn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to get lucky, 100%. And Danny Ainge has gotten lucky in his career
he has.
Multiple times. But then you have to make a series of right decisions after that situation, or even before, really.
So maybe the conclusion I'm coming to in this conversation is to change your culture the way Danny Ainge and Ryan Smith are trying to with the Jazz is it's painful. It's really hard to do because it's really – it would be easy to go back to what Dennis Lindsay did. And look, I'm not pretending that Dennis Lindsay didn't do a good job. He drafted Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, who on our top 50 players of
Dennis
all time –
Dennis did a good job.
They were top six players each of them.
I don't think that's what you're arguing. He did fine.
But to break out of the cycle of the good, not great Jazz, which is who they have been, which goes back to my conversation of aren't teams just who they are. Jazz are always good, and they're never great with the exception of 2 years, and they didn't win the final, so they weren't great. They were really good. They just never broke through. To break from the good, not great, to the truly great, it probably does take some pain. And this is a pain that maybe Danny Ainge and Ryan Smith and Justin Zanuck are willing to go through that no previous iteration or ownership or management was willing to go
See,
through.
See, I don't know if I agree with that, because that's implying that Kevin O'Connor, Dennis Lindsay, and Danny Ainge somehow had a different goal. I never bought into the Larry...
Playoffs is good enough.
I've never bought into that.
Okay.
You're trying to tell me that though they weren't trying to do everything they could to win a championship? I don't buy it. They were limited. Like, Kevin O'Connor had the worst contract in the league forever. And I remember a particularly awkward interview with Gordon Monson where Gordon was like, Dennis, why don't, or not Dennis, Kevin, why don't you go get a big guy so you can beat the Lakers? And Kevin said, how am I going to do that, Gordon? You tell me and I'll go do it. And Gordon's like, oh, it's not my job to do it. Okay? It was the most awkward interview ever. But you could, the frustration from Kevin O'Connor was palpable because it's like, I'm trying. I've begged the rest of the league to take Andre Karolinko's contract. Nobody will do it. How am I supposed to do what you're talking about? It's not possible.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was Kevin O'Connor being like, oh, we're good enough, Gordon. Easy. Don't rock the boat, bro. Going to the second round against the Lakers is good enough. Simmer down now. I don't think that was ever the thing. I certainly don't think that was ever a thing with Dennis. I think Dennis legit thought he had magic in a bottle with Donovan and Rudy, and that they were a couple of moves away from being a contender. And actually, I don't think he was wrong. I just don't think they made the right moves.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I think Danny may be trying to do it differently, but I don't think it's, well, those guys didn't endure enough pain. Maybe that wasn't their strategy, but I don't think that there's one right way to do anything. In fact, the way Kevin O'Connor flipped from the Karl Malone, John Stockton to the Booz Williams era was nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, it was masterful. Yeah, it was great work.
He did it in 2 years. What took the Chicago Bulls? The Chicago Bulls still haven't done it.
Yeah, they had year.
Yeah, right.
They had 1 year.
So, I mean, that's amazing. And he thought with the right motivation and resources and moves, we can be right back on top. And he was pert near right. Made it to the Western Conference Finals, which is really good. Didn't get over the hump, but who does? Danny Ainge has once.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know. Maybe I'm defending the past too much. Maybe they were. But I've never believed that playoffs is good enough. They just want to go to the playoffs. That's it. I've never believed that. Maybe that's the disruption that Kevin O'Connor got wrong. Like, everybody else has to go through 4 or 5 years of sucking to be good again. And he said, no, I don't think so. Watch me do it. And he did it.
He did it, yeah. And they got back to the conference finals.
And Dennis went through a painful rebuild. You're also forgetting about the Ty Corbin year. Actually, years. I count his last two. And then how long did it take Quinn Snyder to have an over 500 team? It was at least 3 years.
It was 3 years, yeah.
That's 5 years of pretty painful stuff. We're on year two of painful stuff. So I don't know if Dennis didn't have the stomach for it. Seems to me he kind of did it. So I don't think there's any guarantee that this works.
No, there's not at all.
Because they're so bad. But I don't think this is anything that they actually haven't tried before.
So again, maybe it goes back then to my thesis that maybe you just are who you are.
I don't think so, or Denver wouldn't have won the title. Denver was the laughingstock of the NBA for 30 years.
Yeah. And, you know,
San Antonio wouldn't have had a dynasty.
So is your whole system based on luck? That lucky, I mean, maybe that's all it is. It's just luck. It's that David Robinson gets hurt, so you decide to tank, and you do win the lottery and get Tim Duncan.
Luckiest thing that's ever happened in sports.
And
how about Cleveland has a title because they were lucky that LeBron James was born down the road.
And would play there. Right, absolutely. Oh, I mean, the only reason we're talking about Denver is they luckily drafted the best player in the NBA in the second round. That's it. Not they weren't better at it. And you know what? Aaron Gordon wasn't good in Orlando. He was good. He wasn't a
number one. And Denver said, come here and be our number four on offense and our number one on defense.
And
he said, I could do that.
Guess what? That's not any different than he actually was in Orlando. That's just not how they played him.
Right.
It's not like he's gotten significantly better.
No.
He has in some ways. But he looks better because he's playing next to Nikola Jokic. Why does Jamal Murray look so good? Well, he's playing next to Nikola Jokic. If you didn't have Jokic on that team, Jamal wouldn't be anything anyone talked about. With all due respect, he's good, not great. So all it is luck of just getting the right guy in the right spot however you get him.
I mean, Denver was lucky that Orlando drafted Aaron Gordon to be Paolo Banchero, and he's not.
So, again, go back to my thesis that maybe you just are who you are with the exception of luck every three decades.
I think you've got to be in position to be lucky. You know what I mean?
And then not squander it once you do get it.
And then once you get it, yeah. You got to be in the position to take advantage of opportunities when something falls into your plate. And the best player in the league falling into your lap in the second round had never happened before and will never happen again. So I wouldn't count on that one. But yeah, they're 100% going to have to be lucky. They were lucky that Rudy Gobert was so awkward looking when he was young.
Yeah.
Because it scared every other team in the league off.
Mm-hmm.
They're lucky that Donovan is 6'1 and not 6'4, because if he were 6'4, he wouldn't have gone, what'd they get him at, 12, 13?
14, 13, yeah, whatever it was, yeah.
He would have gone 2.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get lucky that Malik Monk caught Michael Jordan's eye. I mean, I know that doesn't make for a good sports radio topic, and fans certainly don't want to hear that you have to wait for your opportunity. You have to wait to get lucky. You have to be in the position. San Antonio was lucky again with Wemby.
Yeah, they've been lucky three times. David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and Wemby. It's crazy. They just got luckier than everybody else.
The Kings have drafted in the top 10
50 times for 30 years.
Yep. And can't get it right.
Yeah, right. Never gotten it right.
Can't get it right. So, I mean, it is a combination of being well-run and luck. But once you get the luck, that's why it's so hard. Because once you get the luck, you have to make the next five moves that make you able to take advantage of it. Again, you can make an argument that Joel Embiid is as good as Nikola Jokic. You can make the argument. I'm not saying either one way or another.
You can absolutely make the argument.
But Philadelphia has been so bad after drafting Joel Embiid with every roster move that they made outside of drafting Tyrese Maxey, which again was lucky. That they're nowhere near a title. Are you kidding?
Yeah, they're not close.
So, I don't know. The NBA is tough, but I get frustrated with what's the plan? The plan is to be ready.
Yeah.
The plan is to be ready to roll.
When luck hits.
And when you identify a guy or you get a guy or you draft Donovan Mitchell at 14 and you think he's a guy, well, what's next? And we all love Mike Conley, but that wasn't the move that put them over the top.
No, it didn't. It didn't work.
There could have been a move out there maybe that would have worked. But that wasn't it.
They did not make it.
Signing Bojan Bogdanovic wasn't it.
Yeah. Good players did not make the difference.
Nope. I admire taking a swing at it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do it.
It's better than not trying.
Well, sometimes. No, honestly, sometimes.
Yeah, that was. Those were both better than not doing anything.
I don't know. If they would have not made the Mike move and saved that ammunition for something else, I think it might have worked.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And again, I enjoyed watching him play. And hey, swing and a miss, but I think they could have used that ammo on something more effective. Leaned into their defensive culture. Speaking of culture.
Yeah.
I oftentimes, though, think culture is kind of something that's a little bit overrated. I get, you know, heat culture and all that, and I do think culture is more important at the collegiate level.
Oh, Rudy Gobert punched a teammate last year in the playoffs. Jaden McDaniels broke his hand. He was so mad he walked out of the arena and punched a wall. Their culture was horrendous.
But what was the Rudy Donovan culture? What was their culture? They didn't really have one.
Yeah, never really had one.
They had one for a minute when they were the best defensive team in the league.
Yeah.
And Jay Crowder was out there raining bricks, but sliding under guys on the other end, at least. They had a culture then. All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up. Oh, What You Got Wednesday is next, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I want to remind you to stop by and say hi to Hans and Scotty G. Yes, the 97th best football player in BYU history, Hans Olsen. And Scott Girard, broadcasting live from Spa Treve in Saratoga Springs, 1022 North Redwood Road, coming up tomorrow from noon to 3. Grab a sandwich from Gandolfo's and find out how to about great sports specials from Spa Treve. If you want a sandwich, I'd suggest you get there early because... Well, you never know with Hans. Could be hungry.
Yeah, there's not going to be any food left.
Time for What You Got Wednesday, where Ben and I compete head-to-head in a five-selection draft of two subject matters, one sports-related, one not. Ben creamed me in both of last week's categories.
What were our categories last week?
Best second chances in sports. You won 73-27. And best Utah NHL team names. You won 74-26.
Okay.
All right.
I'll take it.
Today's sports related topic is
best Knicks and 76ers players.
We have a hell of a series going on right now. One of the best I remember in my lifetime. This is a just huge shots, gets to the clutch parts of the game, and nobody's missing shots. So we're drafting the best Knicks and 76ers of all time. You have the number one overall pick, and my question as always is there an obvious choice?
I think so. I'm going to go number one, Dr. J.
Okay. I mean,
he's the doctor.
He's Dr. J. When I think of the Philadelphia 76ers, that is who I think of.
He was the best player in the league, at least for some time. I don't know if you can say that about anybody else on this list, with maybe one minor exception.
Okay, Dr. J, Jake's number one pick, Dr. J. Mine, I actually think this is the obvious name. If you want to veto this, you can. But I'm going to go with Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, it was the Philadelphia Warriors before they changed their name or moved to Golden State or however that worked, but he was in Philadelphia. Wilt Chamberlain.
Kind of.
Do you have an issue with that?
I mean, I guess he was part of the franchise. I don't know. Was he really famous for being a Sixer?
It wasn't ever a Sixer. That's kind of the issue here, is he was a Philadelphia Warrior and then they moved to San Francisco in his fourth season. So if you don't like Wilt Chamberlain as a... But it's where Philadelphia started. Oh, and then he was. Excuse me. In the late 60s, he went back to Philly. Before he became a Laker.
All right.
So yes, Wilt Chamberlain. He won MVP 3 times in Philly. 4 times overall. 3 times with the 76ers. So Wilt Chamberlain.
All right. I'm going to go with... Walt Frazier.
Okay. The coolest player next to Dr. J on this list. Those might be the two coolest players in NBA history. Dr. J was awesome. Walt Frazier was the coolest player ever.
Walt Frazier.
Yeah. Had the nickname Clyde because of how cool he dressed, and they were thinking of Bonnie and Clyde. I'm going to go with Allen Iverson. We've had a little bit of revisionist history, I think, on how good Allen Iverson was. I get it. He was unbelievably unstoppable as a guard. Got that team to the finals in what was a terrible Eastern Conference at that time, too, before LeBron came in and really took over the East and ran it. And AI was very far from perfect. But Allen Iverson, he won an MVP. He's one of the greatest small players of all time, AI.
I always kind of liked AI because he was from Tidewater, Virginia. But I hate what he did to the league.
Okay.
He was the first ball hog point guard, and he inspired a series of ball hog point guards that still last to this day. And
yeah,
I find it obnoxious.
It's fine.
But sure. Yeah, like I said, I've always kind of liked
AI. Great player, but...
But yeah, I don't like the you know, like the legacy he left on the league is not really my favorite. All right, I'm going to take Joel Embiid.
Yeah. Joel is better than AI, actually. I probably should have just taken Joel.
I think so, too.
AI did get them to the finals, like we said.
He did.
And his career is complete.
Did AI have an MVP?
He won an MVP.
Did he?
But if I were drafting the two, as far as building a team around, everybody takes Joel 10 times out of 10.
I would think so.
Man, I don't want to take any Knicks. Again, this is my argument about Patrick Ewing was not as great as we... He's probably the best Knick of all time. I don't know if I've ever seen him play better than I've seen Jalen Brunson over the last couple of weeks, but give me Pat Ewing, regrettably.
You took him before Jalen Brunson.
Well, career-wise, yes.
Yeah.
He's had a better career
than Jalen Brunson. You don't even believe your own argument.
But at his peak, which is what my argument was, I think at his peak, Jalen Brunson is as good as any Knick I've ever seen and probably better. This run from Jalen Brunson is better than what I saw from Pat Ewing.
Okay.
What number is this for Jake? 4?
I'm going to go with William, don't call me Bill, Bradley.
Okay. Nearly a vice president.
Two titles. And yeah. The Knicks don't win titles. And he has two titles as a member of the New York Knicks.
Nearly replaced Al Gore on that second ticket to give Bill a little energy.
He did
energy.
Have a second birth as a politician. But I'm going to go with Bill Bradley.
Bill Bradley. Number 4 for me, I'm going to go with... Mr. Infamous, give me Willis Reed.
No, he's only famous for coming back in being hurt.
Yeah, but also won 2 titles, right? Was
yeah,
on
he
those
did.
Teams.
No,
as well.
It's not a bad pick.
Willis Reed.
All right, my final pick, the round mound of rebound, Charles Barkley.
Yeah. That is going to get you a lot of votes. More votes than who my 5th name is going to be.
Well, real quick on Charles, I would absolutely make the argument the peak of his career came in Philly as well. Some people will tell you Phoenix, but that's ridiculous.
I mean, he won an MVP in Phoenix and took him to the finals.
He was better when he was in Philly. But as usual, Philly is horribly run, and he was on some just terrible teams.
Give me, only because of the movie He Got Game, Earl Monroe, The Pearl. Rookie of the Year. This was actually in Baltimore before he got to the Knicks. 24 points a game. But
he's got a great nickname.
Earl the Pearl Monroe. Very cool. And also won a couple of titles. Or won the 1973 title with the Knicks. And is one of the 75 greatest players of all time. Made the list. So give me Earl Monroe. The Pearl.
The Pearl. All right.
You want to recap?
Yeah, we can recap. Should we just do sports this week? Maybe skip the non-sports
one? No, we can fly through the non-sports one. We're all right.
Okay, all right. Quick recap. Jake, you had 1, Dr. J, 2, Walt Frazier, 3, Joel Embiid, 4, Bill Bradley, 5, Charles Barkley. Ben, you had 1, Wilt Chamberlain, 2, Allen Iverson, 3, Patrick Ewing, 4, Willis Reed, and 5, Earl Monroe.
This is going to be close. I don't know who's going to win. Charles Barkley being 5th on your list might seal it for you.
I thought I got a lot of value from 5.
Yes, yeah, you did.
With Sir Charles.
You did.
Okay, what's our not sports?
All right, in honor of May 4th coming up, we're doing best Star Wars characters.
For May the 4th be with you.
Okay.
Jake?
I feel like there's...
Is there a number one pick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Sarah, do you think there's an obvious number one pick here?
I think so, but mine might be different than others.
Okay.
Well, that's not an obvious number one pick then. Darth Vader.
Okay. That's who I would have taken.
That's the obvious number one pick.
I do think there's another obvious number one pick. But I would have.
You just said you would have taken Darth Vader.
I would have. I think this is 50-50. Now maybe I'm way off because I'm actually not the biggest Star Wars guy as far as like understanding the culture and what people vote for. My number one pick is going to be Han Solo. He's the coolest guy.
Well, he's probably the most popular protagonist. Sure.
Sarah, who would you have taken?
I would have picked Chewbacca.
Well, now you've spoiled it.
Yeah. I'm not going to take Chewie. I'm going to take Princess Leia.
Okay.
For Return of the Jedi alone.
Yeah, Princess Leia rules. It doesn't work without her. All right, number 2, I'm going to go Yoda. That's good value for Yoda at 2. The fourth player off the board.
Now I'll take Chewbacca.
Okay, Chewie's great. I should go with a villain. Give me Darth Maul. Even though he's barely in it. But the hype machine for him was so huge. The hype machine was better than the character.
He's like way down on my villain list even.
I'm the hype in the early early 2000s when he was coming out was such a huge deal. And he never really kind of figured it out.
We could talk about it later. I have other villains higher than Darth Maul even. I'm going to go with Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is awesome in, of course, the original Star Wars. But I thought Ewan McGregor was a terrific cast for him in the crappy reboots.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, I guess I got to go with Luke. Someone's got to take Luke, right?
I wasn't going to take Luke.
He's
such a whiner.
He's a pencil neck. I get it. Like
such a whiner.
Yeah, but someone's got to take Luke. I'll take Luke.
What is this for me, Sarah? 5, this is it?
This is your last pick? I feel like we've each missed a pick.
Oh, man. Because now, do I go with...
I've got two choices, and I'll just take whoever you don't take. Assuming that these are the two.
Probably not. I'm going to go with... Oh, man. Now I'm really torn here. Ben, let's go with... Kyle, everybody loved this stupid robot. I'm going to go away from my instincts. Okay. I would have made a different pick if this wasn't number 5. R2-D2.
That was one of my two. That was one of the two I was going to take. R2's cool. R2 is cool. He's the best of the robots. I know BB-8 had a big moment late, but R2-D2's way cooler. Give me Lando. Lando Calrissian. He's like the charismatic guy. He's like cool.
Kind of.
He's cool.
Kind of.
I like Lando.
All right. Well, I'd take at least two villains before Darth Maul. The Emperor Palpatine.
Okay.
Or Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba is
both
very good.
Better than Darth Maul.
Jabba is good.
What about the... What's the robot dude with all the arms? You know what I'm talking about?
General something, yeah.
Oh, Grievous?
Yes. Even him, I would probably take over Darth Maul.
I was going to have a tough time taking characters from the newer ones. I mean,
it needed some representation. Jabba's better. You're right. Jabba's better. I probably should have taken Jabba.
I was thinking of taking Jabba. With 5, though, I felt like I got a lot of value out of R2. I feel like I'll get a lot of votes out of that.
No one went with Ben Kenobi?
I did, too. I selected Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, you took Obi-Wan?
Yes, I did. And then I followed that up with, my analysis was, he was cool in the originals, and Ewan McGregor was the perfect cast for him in the reboots.
I was going through my list. I apologize.
Also, C-3PO, he's funny.
He's a dweeb, though. He's a dweeb.
Yeah, but that's what makes him endearing.
I couldn't take Luke and C-3PO and have two dweebs on my team.
Stay tuned. We'll wrap up the show.
Do you
want to
recap? Do you want to recap?
Oh, yeah, we probably should. Sorry, we're over.
All right, really quick. Jake, 1, Darth Vader. 2, Princess Leia. 3, Chewie. 4, Obi-Wan. And 5, R2-D2. Ben, you had 1, Han Solo. 2, Yoda. 3, Darth Maul. 4, Luke Skywalker. And 5, Lando.
I think you're going to win that one. You might win both. It was a good draft.
Stay tuned. Wrapping it up next, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Two amigos on the airways, talking sports. They got him in Jake's and also loves his tie guy. Ben's got style with his scarves. Oh my.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Wrapping up a Wednesday, our 50th segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology in doors and windows since 1993. Call them today. For your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. Jason tweets in about our draft with the Star Wars. He says, you two totally missed out by not taking Rey, Kylo Ren, and Han's favorite, Jar Jar Binks.
I think it's Jar Jar.
Jar Jar.
Does Han's call him Jar Jar?
He might. I don't know. I watched all the new ones. I've only seen them once. And I didn't really feel the attachment. I'm not a huge Star Wars guy either, although I did love the original 3. So, yeah, maybe we missed on those. But for some reason, I didn't identify with those movies. Maybe it's how old I am. You know what I mean? When I saw the original movies, I was young. It's sure. Kind of when you're romantic about that sort of thing. But I didn't really consider those.
It. I like the latest. I like the not newest, but not the early 2000s ones, which I get a lot of people have a place for, and that's fine. But like there was that run when they first came back, and they made two or three that I thought were really good, and then they do what Disney always does and whoever always does. It's just like they just jumped the shark. They just were like, oh, well, we have this IP, and we're going to keep making this and spinoffs and Mandalorians and the Han Solo movie and all these different individual people that are like, yeah, part of the lore. But one of the cool things about Star Wars was there was three movies, and for 35 years, that was all there was, and they were like kind of sacred. And they've lost that sacred feeling because now every character has a TV show.
Well, yeah, George Lucas sold out.
Yeah.
He sold out the first time by making three more movies because the payday was going to be so big. And then he sold the IP to Disney for $1 billion or whatever.
Now, good for him. He donated all that money to the education system. That was awesome. Like all of his money.
Did he?
I think he gave it to the Florida education system.
Yeah, Skywalker Ranch still seems to be pretty. I don't know if he gave all of his
money. He's not penniless, but he gave like $4 billion, something absurd. Yeah. Pro George Lucas. That was a good
one. In the same way that LeBron built a school in Cleveland?
But actually better. And I am good. Yeah, build schools. You know what, LeBron? Build schools. Fund schools.
He kind of didn't actually fund the school, though, which is why I make the joke. All right. Did we miss anybody, Sarah, on the draft? You're a Star Wars person. Should we?
I'm not that big of a Star Wars. I've been having to look up names because I keep forgetting who's who. But I remember seeing them growing up, and my favorite color is purple. And so I really liked Mace Windu, the guy with the purple lightsaber.
Yeah.
So right. I probably would have picked. Mine would have been a very niche draft.
Which might have won because the Star Wars dweebs out there are like.
Like everybody seems to like Boba Fett, even though he's in the movies for like 30 seconds.
The little characters that like steal things. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
The Jawas?
Yeah, the Jawas.
We didn't take any Ewoks.
Wicket?
Yeah. Whatever.
What do you mean whatever?
Whatever they're called. Whatever those things are.
Well, I even know the actor who played Wicket.
Yeah. We didn't take any of the big robots, the walkers, the drones. We didn't take any of that stuff.
Did you ever see the Ewoks movie with Wilford Brimley?
I have seen it. Yeah.
Amazing.
When I was very little.
Amazing.
Probably wasn't.
Or the Stormtroopers, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure the nerds will be up in arms. All right, stay tuned. Hans and Scotty G are coming up right around the corner. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks,
Jake
Sarah.
And Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.